general, or seeing someone who looks like you doing something incredible, that creates something in your body.
And I'm thinking maybe the next roundtable discussion for Stratford should be a discussion with Asian artists about their realities and what they deal with in this industry, because that I think that's its own very specific conversation too.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm still, after many, many years, I'm still synthesizing my own experience at Stratford. I was there just for one season when they did Pericles, and the director at the time decided to set Pericles in Asia. So they did that, and then they also put on King Nai. So it was kind of like a double cast kind of situation. And it was a very interesting experience, you know, like going from doing children's theater and having your own costumes and your own personal clothing rented for like $5 a day, and then going into an enormous place like that with like incredible resources and having dressers, you know, and perfectly fitted costumes. It was the summer actually of SARS. So there was a feeling of otherness, I think, that some of the Asian performers might have felt. I mean, like most of them came from Toronto. I don't think there wasn't any Asian actors that were from Stratford. And I don't talk about often, but I remember the second day that I was there, I went in the town and I went to, I had a massage appointment, and I was sitting in the waiting room, and the waiting room was full, and there was this older man across from me with an oxygen tank with his arms crossed and his legs crossed. And he looks at me and he says, "Do you feel lucky to be here?" And I was stunned. Like, I really didn't know what he meant. And I think I said, "Oh, well, you know, like, yeah, I'm in Pericles, I'm in Taming of the Shrew, I'm in Love's Labor's Lost, you know, it should be good." And he went, "Yeah, but do you feel lucky to be here?" And I was stunned, and the room was full, and nobody said anything. And that moment stood out for me. I'm pretty sure a lot of other artists that are not Asian or a visible minority, they may not have gotten a question like that. It's one of the things that really irks me about how when you are cast in a predominantly Caucasian show, there is that feeling like, "Oh, you're lucky to be here." And it's pretty awful. And yeah, anyways, there's a lot of like thoughts on those kinds of experiences, but I'm really happy that a lot of people are talking about them, because in that moment when it happens to you, sometimes you're alone. You feel very alone when those little moments happen to you. And to have people talk about it now is like painful, like for me to listen to, but also it's an important viewpoint for people to witness and to hear. Yeah, it's very healing, I think.
Erin, did you have any other thoughts to add to that?
About Stratford? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's funny because we both had Stratford experiences. I was at Stratford for a week this year to workshop a play about ping pong. And, like, nothing really racist happened to me in that town. But also just, like, I realized how lucky I am to be a Hamilton and Toronto-based artist, because there were just little things walking down the street at Stratford that you would notice people would look at you a little strange, that we were at Asian restaurants with no Asians in sight, either serving or around us. Yeah, just getting strange looks on the street. I know there's an actor named Evie Smith who was attacked on Facebook because he pointed out a Confederate flag, and then a bunch of Stratford locals started posting images of people being lynched. So, yeah.
Yeah, I saw that too.
I'm thankful that I've never felt afraid before. And, like, again, nothing racist happened to us at Stratford, and the festival took pretty good care of us, but just some towns have energies, right? And, like, the energy of that town, no matter what the festival does, I think will always kind of be a white, conservative farming town. And that's just a reality of that place. And I think the institution is doing a lot of work to resist that now, but I think that, like, I that was unprecedented for me. And it's something that, like, really, really inspires me to keep making things for folks.
I hear you, Erin. I think that in some ways, Porchlight is our action also. You know? Like, we want people to come home. We want to build a home so that artists can come back to Hamilton. Yeah, we call it Porchlight Because you know when your parents, when you go out and your parents leave the porch light on?
Yep.
For you, it's because...
Back in our day, Karen, when our parents would let us go outside on our own.
Yes.
Get out of the house!
Yeah, remember, yeah. They would leave the porch light on, and it's because they cared. And when you, you know, decided to come home, and the wee hours of the morning, the light was on for you, so you could find your way home. And that is the reason why we built porch light. We want people to feel home. We want them to come back.
Any final thoughts for our listeners before I let the two of you go about the garden project or anything else you'd like our listeners to know about?
Yeah, we're so grateful. We have over $15,000 in donations from over... from over 300 individuals and groups from around the world.
Wow.
And that would not have been possible without our partners at industry. Like, organized the funding portal. They have been hustling as well as us. This is very much their initiative as well as ours. They collaborate with us. They have skills that we do not have, so we're so grateful to them and all of our donors. We're also incredibly grateful to the people in Hamilton who have already been doing the work, like Katoko Mai, a non-binary artist who creates really stunning avant-garde performance art pieces, who has kind of been a community builder for trans, non-binary, and queer youth. Radha Manon and Cobra, mm-hmm. who've been trying their damnedest to
and
bring the diverse
Red Betty
community
Theater.
Together. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, Sorry?
Oh, I was just going to say, she's had Red Betty for quite some time, and she's been working it. You know, she's been, like, funding herself. She's been, like, she works really hard. She's actually our first recipient of the garden project. We actually wanted to...
Woo!
Yes, we wanted to make sure that Radha Manon was recognized as the first recipient.
Amazing. Yeah, no, I've seen many of her productions over the years, and she's a fantastic theater artist and writer.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring that up because we're not the first people trying to do something in the city, and we do stand on the shoulders of others. Like, I know personally, this would not have happened, at least in my mind, without generosity from folks like Marjorie Chan, Nina Lee Aquino, David Yee, Philip Aiken, people who taught me that radical generosity was so important when I'm angry and when I'm full of rage, that if I can turn that into generosity to build something that will, like, that's what legacy is really about. That's what artistry is really about. And that's why I'm so thankful that Karen and I met so many years ago, because Karen is also such a champion of generosity. And everyone in the industry, Rose, Matt, Laura, Rick, and Anna, they're just fountains of generosity. And I think that's what Hamilton needs. And I'm so happy that, like, there's a community building around that. And already folks who are already doing that work, like, it just feeds into it more.
And Karen, for you, any final thoughts?
I agree with Aaron. I feel like being away, you know, going to Ryerson Theater School and then learning so much from all the different communities, I didn't really find my voice, I think, until I started to do stuff with Asian communities and companies such as Pujen and Carlos Bolosan Theater, working on projects with Kahoot, and also the advocacy and storytelling work that I do with the Quentin Vine Collective. All of that I take with me. I'm the sum total of that. And I bring it back home. And I think Aaron's right. Like, all those experiences that we had to have away, now we can, like, start planting it here amongst what's going on, and hopefully just make it a better place.
Here, here. Well, thank you, Karen, and thank you, Aaron, for all that you're doing. And I do encourage people to go to industrypresents.com/garden-project, because then you can find out how to apply and how to donate and find out more about the Garden Project and what Aaron and Karen are doing. So thank you, both of you, and I'm looking forward to finding out who else is awarded a Garden Project grant. So it's going to be exciting.
Thank you so much, Lyle. Thank you for
thank
having
you.
Us.
My pleasure. You've been listening to Aaron Jan and Karen Anchetta, two of the co-producers of The Garden Project. Go to industrypresents.com to find out more.
This is The Hawk, 101.5 FM, online at 1015thehawk.ca.
Hawk hat up to here. The heat is on in Saigon.
But till they tell us we're gone, I'm gonna buy you a girl.
You can't buy me a beer. Showtime!
See my bikini's just the right size. Don't you enjoy how it rides up my thighs? Look from behind, it'll knock out your eyes.
I'll show you my special trophy of war.
For a marine, I'll show more.
Your brass struck on your wall with a pin in my ass.
If you get me, you will travel first class.
I'll show you, we will make magic, Sherry.
You buy more tickets from me. The winner gets them for free.
The meat is cheap in Saigon. I used to love getting stoned, waking up with some whore. I don't know why I went dead. It's not fun anymore.
New from the country, untouched. Legs unparted, hearts uncharted.
I'm 17 and I'm new here today. The village I come from seems so far away. All of the girls know much more what to say, but I know I have a heart like the sea. A million dreams are in me.
Oh, Jesus, John, who is she?
I'm Lila Miklosh, and this is Center Stage on 101.5 The Hawk. If you want to stay up to date with what's happening on the show, you can always join the Center Stage with Lila Miklosh on 101.5 FM The Hawk Facebook fan page, or you can follow me on Twitter at Lila Miklosh, that's at LYLAMIKLOS, or on Instagram at @TheReal_LilaMiklosh. All the songs on today's show are in celebration of summer. So far we heard Summertime from Porgy and Bess, sung by Paul Robeson. Summer Nights from Grease, sung by John Travolta, Olivia Newton-John and company. Too Darn Hot from Kiss Me Kate, sung by Ella Fitzgerald. The Heat Is On in Saigon from the international cast recording of Miss Saigon. And this cast includes some of the original Canadian cast of Miss Saigon, including Kevin Gray as the engineer and Hamilton's own Charles Agilet as Toy. More summer songs from Broadway coming your way here on 101.5 The Hawk.
Oye, ¿qué pasó? Blackout, blackout. Vino el apagón, ay Dios.
Oye, ¿qué pasó?
Blackout, blackout.
Vino el apagón, ay Dios.
street. People looting and shooting. Sunny, they wanna see your robbery. We gotta keep moving.
Nah, man, I can't leave. We gotta guard the store.
They gonna bombard the store until you ain't got a store no more.
I got
more.
A baseball bat on a rack in the back.
I got a couple of Roman candles. We can distract the vendors.
Hey, yo, I see some thugs coming. Man, we gonna get jacked
up. Give me your light. I'll be right back. Back up, back up, back up.
With your life.
Abuela, I've never seen this much money in my life. Nina, there you are.
I gotta go.
I'll get you out of here tonight.
I don't need anything tonight. I can find my way home.
I'm Lila Miklosh, and this is Center Stage on 101.5 The Hawk. You just heard Blackout from the original Broadway cast recording of Lin-Manuel Miranda's In the Heights. Disappointingly, his film version of this musical is on hold due to the COVID-19 pandemic, but far more exciting news, for those of you who haven't seen Hamilton, you can now check it out on Disney Plus. And from everything I'm hearing, this is a must watch for theater lovers. A shout out to my special guests, Karen Anchetta and Aaron Jan, who talked to us about their initiative, The Garden Project, that's helping to support BIPOC performance artists. You can find out more about their initiative by visiting industrypresents.com. We're going to end off the hour with another summer song from a Broadway musical. Here is Patina Miller from the new Broadway cast recording of Pippin with Simple Joys. Make sure you tune in again next week from 6 to 7 Sundays here on 101.5 The Hawk. Until then, stay safe and keep well.
Well, I sing you the story of a sorrowful lad. He had everything he wanted, didn't want what he had. He had wealth and pelf and name and fame and all of that noise. But he didn't have none of those simple joys. His life seemed purposeless and flat. Aren't you glad you don't feel like that? So he ran from all the deeds he'd done. He ran from things he'd just begun. He ran from himself, which was mighty far to run. Out into the country where he played as a boy. He knew he had to find him some simple joy. He wanted some place warm and green. We all could use a change of scene. Sweet summer evenings, hot wine and bread, sharing your supper, sharing your bed. Simple joys have a simple voice that says, why not go ahead?
the sea, or a newt on the root of a banyan tree, than a man who never learns how to be free, not till the day he dies. Sweet summer evenings, sapphire skies, feasting your belly, feasting your eyes. Simple joys have a simple voice, it says time is living's prize. And wouldn't you rather be a left-handed flea, a crab on a slab at the bottom of the sea, a newt on the root of a banyan tree, or a pig on a swing galley, than a man who never learns how to be free, not till the day, not till the day, not till the day, not till the day.
Broadcasting across the Steel City, this is 101.5 The Hawk.
Good evening and welcome to Art Waves. I'm Bernadette Rule. And tonight my guest is Marg Heidebrecht. Marg Heidebrecht lives and writes in Dundas, enfolded and influenced by the Niagara Escarpment, where she climbed by bike to her English as a second language teaching job at Mohawk College. She was drawn to that field because of its captivating combination of people and language. For 25 years, her creative energy focused on lesson plans and curriculum design. But her end-to-end walk of the Bruce Trail in 2015 and her retirement 1 year later prompted her to write a series of personal essays. Her pre-COVID weeks included helping with grandchildren, baking at 541 Eatery and Exchange, and settling in at her desk with her phone set to do not disturb. She recently qualified for half-price fare on transit, but prefers always to walk. Welcome to Art Waves, Marg Heidebrecht.
Thanks, Bernadette.
Well, I want to congratulate you on your new book, but I also want to give you my condolences on the loss of your friend Pam, which I didn't know about, of course, until I read the book, but it plays a large role in the book. And so I'm so sorry for your loss.
Thank you. Thank you for reading the book. Thank you for not only entering my loss, but just that holy ground that is loss more broadly. And it's not something that people are always comfortable doing. So I appreciate you taking the time to clear space for that.
Yes. Okay, so the book is called In the Shade. Is this your first book?
It is. I've done writing in various ways over the years. As you mentioned in the introduction, a lot of it was related to my work as an ESL instructor. I guess the only other book was a book of poetry that I typed when I was 8 years old, and I even put a little copyright on the back, and my sister found it. My mom died about 4 years ago, and my sister found it tucked in with all her things, but that was an indication of how important words were to me as a child, as a young adult, now as a senior, but this is the first book that's published, yes.
And it's Friesen Press that published it.
Yes. Friesen Press is a way for people like me who come to writing without possibly the confidence or the ability to have it published in a more traditional route. It's a Canadian company based out of British Columbia. And through them, I was able to get some editing help, some book design help, and published it last fall.
Okay, well, it is a lovely book, and we're going to talk about the cover later because that is another pertinent detail to the book. But I want to go back for just a second to your book of poetry you wrote when you were 8 years old. I do think that writers often show themselves as children, and I wanted to ask about your first experience with writing. Do you remember what that book was called? Did you title it?
I don't think it had a title, though I remember typing it on my dad's typewriter and playing around with all the symbols that were above the number keys on the typewriter. So it had a very exotic cover. I was possibly more worried about those. We wouldn't have called them icons or emojis. We wouldn't have called them emojis then, but I think in some ways I was experimenting before we knew how phones would take over with all the symbols we could do. So I don't remember a title. But I do remember feeling I had to put something with copyright on the back so that nobody would take these amazing poems and do something else with them.
That is really cute. I love that. Okay, so Marg Heidebrecht, In the Shade, your first book, as we just mentioned, it is about walking the Bruce Trail, but it's really about a lot more than that. Can you give us an overview of the themes of the book?
Well, I put in the subtitle the three words, friendship, loss, and the Bruce Trail, because I didn't want people to pick it up thinking it would be a reference book with maps and, you know, notes about accommodation. Those things do exist. And I also didn't want people to think it was only about loss. Some people have been almost a little bit afraid to read it because they think it will be too sad and too heart-wrenching. And I think there are parts of it that are that. But I think, like most of life, things are not tidy. I think it's sort of, when I started writing about the trail, it's very hard for me to write about it without writing about the people that I've walked with. And Pam was the key person that I've walked with my whole life. And because she had recently died when I started writing it, it was hard to write about her without also integrating loss. So it's about what happened on the trail with Pam and me, but it's also about what happens to us when we go outside, how nourishing that whole experience is, how healing it is. And loss, I think I'm somebody who has always felt that if you're going to experience the range of what we have in this life, that loss is one of the things that we experience. And I didn't want to just say, let me talk about Pam, but not loss. Let me talk about the Bruce Trail, but not Pam. So they sort of got woven together. And readers have commented to me that they have come into the book with one of those perspectives that drew them in, but then they wanted to connect with the others. So the people who knew Pam and were reading it because of their friendship with her all of a sudden became much more intrigued with the Bruce Trail. And people who wanted to hike the Bruce Trail then got drawn into the relationship and the other experience of the trail that is much more than just the trees and the ground and the water, that is sort of a deeper experience that I think a lot of hikers know anyway, but I named it from my experience. And then they were able to connect with it in their experience as well.
Okay, I understand. And what is Pam's last name?
Will. Pam Will. W-I-L-L.
Yes. And how long did the book take you to write? And how difficult was it, given this material and the loss of Pam, to write?
Well, I started writing the essays probably within a couple of months of her dying. I wasn't sure what shape it was going to take. So from when I started writing the essays to when I submitted them to the publisher, it was probably about a year. Though I must say at about the 9-month mark, which is sort of interesting because that's the length of time to nurture and birth a human, I had a very positive experience at the Hamilton Public Library with their artist in residence at the time, Kate Cayley. And I took her the bare bones of the essay that became the source of the painting on the front cover, which I know we're going to chat about in more detail later. So at that 9-month mark, she offered feedback and encouragement that made me think this was not going to be something that I photocopied and gave to my family and Pam's family. This had the potential to be a book that would be published and would be of value to people beyond my own immediate circle. But I would say it was about a year. In terms of how difficult it was, two things come to mind. One was, it was a lovely way to sit with my Bruce Trail experience, given that Pam was no longer here in terms of a reminiscing partner. So when you think of the people in your life that have been in your life for a long time, and you think about the conversations that say, remember the time that we stopped at that place and we both had strawberry ice cream, or remember that awful storm and we were camping and we had to ditch the tent. I mean, I didn't have her to do that reminiscing with. So I think flipping through the reference guide, flipping through my very modest journal, was a way of me sitting with her in that experience. And that was quite lovely. In terms of the writing, I think I turned a corner, which will serve me well, has served me well. I stopped waiting to be inspired, and I just sat down at the computer and turned my timer on for 90 minutes. And some days, amazing stuff came out, and other days, nothing came out. But I just started a new relationship with the writing process, which took the mystery away from it a little bit. And I would turn the timer on. At 90 minutes, I would take a break. I would either do a quick walk and come back, or I would make a cup of tea or do something and then set the timer again for 90 minutes. So I think once I had the idea of the shape of the book, and once I had that discipline, it seemed possible. Before then, I think the idea of writing a book had not seemed possible, but that new discipline made it seem like I could do this.
Oh, yeah, wonderful. And that's good advice for anyone thinking, oh, my God, writing a book, it's like running a marathon. You know, I couldn't do it. I might be able to write a poem or an essay or a short story, but I couldn't do a book. And in truth, each of those other disciplines can be as difficult as writing a complete memoir or novel or whatever it is. But that really is good advice and an interesting thing that you were able to get yourself kickstarted that way every day, or most days, I guess. Well, I'm really glad to hear that as you put it, it was a lovely way to sit with the experience. That's beautiful. Will you read us a passage from it, Marg Heidebrand?
Sure. And when I was thinking about what to read, I decided I wanted to read something that did not require Kleenex, because as I said a couple minutes ago, some people just assume it's going to be too heartbreaking to read. So I'm going to read this one. And given that you live in Hamilton area, and I'm assuming a lot of your listeners do too, I will just tell you that I'm referring to a library, which is the Dundas branch of the library. And I'm also referring to a stretch of the trail just west of Highway 6 as it leaves the 403 and starts going up toward Clapison Corner. So for people in the area who know that, there's a little stretch of the trail, and then it goes under Highway 6 in quite a magical way, and then it comes out the other side in a very peaceful homestead. And I'm starting, I'll just tell you this too, Bernadette, there's a reference guide that the Bruce Trail publishes with maps and with written descriptions of the trail. And so I'm starting this section with a reference to that guidebook. The guidebook is designed to concentrate on, is it going to be hard today? On the back of each map is a written explanation that includes key words such as rugged, steep, crevice, alert, extreme caution, plus reassurances of well-defined, grassy field, farm track, in paragraphs that describe the route from south to north. However, Pam and I pieced together a non-linear journey that takes shuttling, accommodation, and distance from home and on the track into account. As a result, we travel north to south 25% of the time. On those days, we are aided by blazes that mark the route in both directions, but the trail descriptions become linguistic puzzles. We read from the bottom of the page to the top, converting ascent to descent, enter to exit. The angle of steep remains constant, but pain in our knees reminds us to translate climb up to inch down slopes. In addition to these published warnings and reassurances, we are counseled by other hikers. Most give well-balanced advice, though the candor of a few throws us for a loop. On one occasion, Pam runs into an acquaintance who uses the word treacherous, to describe a short section that is a stone's throw from the library in which they are checking out books. She is breathless when she calls me, and both of us scratch our heads since we've been on that trail multiple times. Treacherous? Not that we recall. we were several decades younger and possibly distracted by doling out graham crackers to the children who accompanied us. When the day comes to tackle it, we brace ourselves. My husband drops us off early to give us extra time to navigate the horror that looms ahead. 1 kilometer, nothing. 2 kilometers, zilch. Confused yet relieved, we pause for water before entering the tunnel that leads under a well-traveled highway to tranquil woods and an old homestead. One of us, probably me, is smug. We've gotten good at this. Skilled, adept. The other, probably Pam, shakes her head. It's dry today, a hint of frost, some wet leaves, and that climb and those stairs would be slick, very slick. I remain unconvinced. But treacherous? She nods, uh-huh. I hang on to my doubts for 2.5 years until on the outskirts of Wyarton, the tables are turned. It is October and we are near the end of a 15-kilometer day, the conclusion of the Sydenham section, which is muddy but manageable until we reach the route down the escarpment. The ingenious method of descent includes a double ladder and stone stairs. To this day, my heart races when I remember hesitating, then taking off my backpack and tossing it across a gap in the rocks before descending. Manageable becomes difficult. Below us, someone is building a deck, the sound of a drill competing with the Golden Oldies on a radio. Am I going to tumble down while Benny King sings Stand By Me? Seriously? Not so skilled and adept after all. We survive, stop in town for coffee before driving home, and chat with a couple at the next table. Been hiking? Our grubby appearance gives us away. Yeah, 4 amazing days. Silence, and then, what did you think of those ladders? We replied instantly, in unison, treacherous.
Nice passage, that's good. And, you know, it is really a good reminder, too, that the Bruce Trail, which seems so very, you know, you say, I think, somewhere on your cover, think, don't think crazy, think calm, doable.
I did a bit of a spin on Cheryl Strayed's title, Wild, because she hiked the Pacific Crest Trail in California, and her book was called Wild. So I've said for mine, think mild, not wild.
Yes, okay. But it is a trail we do underestimate because it is such a homely part of our lives. It's right mm-hmm. here. And I love the idea of the man building the deck right there, or people checking out library books within yards of it. You know, mm-hmm. it's really quite a good reminder that it can be dangerous. But I like the humor that you inject there. Tell me this: did you understand before you and Pam walked the Bruce Trail how important she was to you?
Yes. She's someone I met when my daughter, who's now 39, and her daughter, who's now 38, were on the swings at the park at the same time. And that is such a special time to make friends because we are busy with children. We are finding our way as new parents. And when you find someone who can share that part of your life with you and negotiates those years of parenting and then returning to work in a way that you can be honest and helpful to each other. That's what I found in Pam right away. So she would be the person that I would call if neither child had slept and I needed a coffee and it was still only 7:45 in the morning. I could call her and say, you know what, can we walk down? We at that point, when our children were quite young, we lived within a 5-minute walk of each other. So right away, we had a lot in common, and I just felt I could be myself with her. So we had walked weekly for years and years, and one of the essays, she had never said she wanted to walk the Bruce Trail. I'd never told her I'd wanted to walk the Bruce Trail, and we found out that we both had that in mind, then right away, we started planning to do it.
Okay. And I wanted you to just generally tell us about Pam apart from you. Who was this woman? And tell us a little bit about her and her life and so on.
Mm-hmm. Well, She grew up in Sudbury, and the reason I say that is because I think she, her growing up years lived much closer to snow and water and boats and ski hills than I did. So her life was very physical. I found out, actually, I heard more details when she died because I heard from her high school friends how they had gone to her, they called it camp up north rather than a cottage, but all these things were very isolated, especially in the winter. So here's an example of what she had done. She and her high school friends got on a train, were dropped off at the side of the road where they then snowshoed into a cabin, spent the weekend there, and then snowshoed out at the end of the weekend to meet the train to come home. So she grew up learning how to camp, to swim, all those outdoor skills. And we sort of joked on the trail that she would know what to do in an emergency. So I felt very safe, but I was not as skilled in all those things that she was. So she was a camp counselor, a lifeguard. She also was somebody who could do home repairs. So she could build a deck, build a fence, you know, do home renovation projects. Just very competent with physical skills. Also very gracious and a great hostess. So she would be the one in the neighborhood along with her husband, Al, who would have people in for dinner, they would host other families, just very gracious in terms of being hospitable, but very sort of strong, competent, skilled person. Yeah, in a lot of areas that I wasn't.
Well, she sounds amazing, and she does sound like such a wonderful person to get to know. You have an epigraph from Virginia Woolf in your book, In the Shade, Marg Heidebrecht, and this is the epigraph from her. I meant to write about death, only life came breaking in as usual. And when I read that epigraph, I thought, in a way, this book is the reverse of that, because it begins by being all about the project of the two of you walking the trail, but then death breaks in. Can you talk about those themes in the book and how you balanced them?
Well, you're right. You're right. The life came first and then the death. But I actually started the writing fairly soon after the death. So when I started writing about the death, I expected the whole book to be somber, which is why I think the Virginia Woolf quote means so much to me. Because as I was writing about Pam's decline and death, all the pockets of love and joy and goodness still kept sort of surfacing. So I would reflect on things that had happened between us. I would reflect on other times in my life where there had been death, but also then some kind of joy connected to it. So I think that's why that quote meant a lot. Though having said that, we did have the adventure. And we had no idea through the hiking years at all that she was ill. It all happened after her first sign that sent her to the doctor happened after the hike. So the hike was not, we weren't encumbered by would she be able to finish it from a health point of view, what was happening. There were not a lot of conversations around health because she was fine. Now, having said that, there were other conversations about other people's challenges with health. And I had a period of about 4 months where I was not all that well, and we couldn't hike for a chunk of time, but it was my health, not her health. So we completed it with both of us in great health, and then things were derailed after that.
Okay. And it wasn't very long after you completed the hike that she began to understand that she had cancer.
Yeah.
You know, that helps me a lot to know your intention in writing the book was actually, because when I looked at it, I thought your intention was to write about the hike first. And so when I know that really you just wanted to write about Pam after the loss of her, that, and then of course the hike was the perfect way to do it, that, and thank God you had that. That really was a was that helps me understand the balance and that epigraph a lot better. All right, so if you're just tuning in, Art Waves listeners, this is Art Waves on 101.5 The Hawk. I'm Bernadette Ruhl, and my guest tonight is writer Marg Heidebrecht, whose first book, In the Shade, has just come out. Let's just ask right this second how people can get the book.
Okay, so I would say right off that the place locally would be King West Books in Westdale, the corner of King and Sterling. Dave, Teresa, and their son John have been great hosts to my book, great supporters of my book. They both read it. And what they're doing now, they pivoted very quickly. So they've got a great website, and you can shop online and pick it up curbside. And if you live in Westdale or Ainsleywood area, they will actually get on bicycles and drop it off at your door. If you are an e-reader, Friesen Press has a very easy one-click method to download an e-copy of the book. If you're outside the Hamilton area, you can also order it from Friesen Press. There'll be a shipping fee and also a bit of time involved for it to get to you. The third way is that I made a point in January and February of cold calling a lot of libraries that are close to the Bruce Trail. So it's available in most libraries from Niagara-on-the-Lake to Tobermory. Some of them it's still on order, but most of them it's on their shelves. So as soon as they reopen, you can get the book there. Hamilton Library has it. So a number of libraries. There are also a couple of other bookstores pre-COVID. Different Drummer in Burlington, RBG Gift Shop in Burlington, and also The Printed Word in Dundas. They were very kind and put it on their shelves. They're regrouping, so I'm not quite sure how they are handling things right now. I think RBG, the interior of the building, is closed. The other two bookstores, Printed Word and Different Drummer, are trying to do some online options. So if you live close to them, it's worth a call.
Okay, and this brings me very neatly to my next question, which is, before the COVID-19 pandemic, at least, many people were making the pilgrimage in Spain to the Camino, or along the Camino. It had become extremely popular, and I am not sure of the status of the Camino right now, whether it's open to pilgrims or not, probably on a limited basis or something, I just don't know. But everything has changed since March, just previous to this recording, which is in early July of 2020, which is a historic time for sure, when we're all in the pandemic lockdown. So you've answered any questions I had about that. Was walking the Bruce Trail a kind of pilgrimage for you, Marg Heidebrecht, or was it primarily undertaken for reasons of physical health? And also, have you ever considered doing the Camino?
There's a few things I'm thinking of. First of all, I have not considered the Camino. I have traveled in Europe quite a bit, but my preferred method of transportation is cycling, is a bicycle in Europe. So I've had wonderful cycling opportunities there. One of the things that does not appeal to me about Camino is the idea that meaningful things have to happen far away. And I think the Bruce Trail, whether it's the virus or whether it's those of us who can afford to travel, rethinking the carbon footprint of travel, I think everybody's going to start thinking about what's much closer to home. So the idea of a spiritual journey that happens only if I'm out of where I am usually planted doesn't really appeal to me. So having said that, the Bruce Trail, even though there would have been some conversations that would have classified as of a spiritual nature, I don't think it was either a spiritual journey or a physical health journey. I think it was a project. So let me back up by saying we both knew we wanted to keep walking. We'd walk together our whole lives, usually once a week, sometimes more. But this became a retirement project to say we like being together, we like walking. How can we frame this to give it a bigger context and a bigger meaning in that we then had a goal and a focus. So when we would finish one walk, right away Pam would do the maps and I would check out the B&Bs and various things. And it just sort of gave all that a bit of a focus. And between hikes, when we walked routes that we knew would keep our cardio and our muscles in shape for the next Bruce Trail walk. So Pam was, when you asked about her before, she was probably much more task-oriented than I often am. So this sort of took this connection we had as friends and walkers and put it into a package. Does that make sense?
That's a wonderful answer. I understand.
Okay.
Yeah, I understand perfectly. That's terrific. Marg Heidebrecht, in your bio, you refer to a series of essays that you wrote after retiring from Mohawk College. Are those the essays that make up In the Shade? And, is that a part of how you began the book?
A couple of them were. I think that format appeals to me partly because of the length. I have a short attention span, which used to sort of embarrass me, but now I've claimed it. And I think the length of an essay to me is the perfect length for fleshing out one idea. So I have a number of essays that I've written and sort of tucked away. The one that I did rework for the book was one that began with a question. Somebody asked me if I had always been an athlete, and I didn't really see myself as an athlete, but I explored that. I think the essays that I have tucked away often come from an observation I've had that has stuck with me or a question that I've had. I'm working on something now that I'm about to turn 66, but on my 50th birthday, a friend said, somehow she had mentioned that I was turning 50 to her mother. That's another story. But the mother said, oh, she won't have any trouble turning 50. Only beautiful women have trouble turning 50. So that has been in my mind for 16 years. And that's one of the essays I'm currently working on. And I know, but I'm exploring it in a way that some women have lived their lives where the first thing people think about who they are is she's beautiful. And I'm being very generous with that woman and saying that those of us who haven't walked through life that way, we've been smart, or we've been funny, or we've been kind, or we've been determined. And so I'm exploring that. So that gives you an example of something that somebody said to me, or something that I read, or something that I remember. And I sort of mull it over long enough until I say, what do I want to do with this? And then it becomes an essay. So I've sort of filed those away. Some are better than others. Some come more naturally than others, but that's sort of the format that I'm comfortable with writing.
Well, I really would love to read the essay you write after that comment. that is something that all women are haunted by their entire lives, whether they have it or don't have it. It is one of those things that seems to try to define us, and we have to not allow it, because for one thing, it's a very ethereal concept. It's the beauty in the eye of the beholder stuff. It's a value that is not helpful to society in general, let alone to the individual. So that sounds like a great topic for an essay. I'd love to read it. I hope you will find a place to publish your essays. I wonder if maybe, I keep thinking you could be a person who writes those essays in The Spectator, that we read. In any case, so you're continuing to write essays. Do you write fiction or poetry, or do you write in any other literary format?
I have tried to write short stories, but they seem to always turn into essays. I think short stories that I like reading have more action, and I think my writing tends to have more reflection. So I like reading short stories, but I think I need to have more happen to be able to write a successful one. I did try for a while writing a haiku every day as a way of sort of processing my inner life, as a way of saying, okay, I will take what has happened today, see if I can put it into a haiku. And I have done that in fits and starts, the way some people might keep a diary. I like that idea of just being very succinct with words, being very aware of the number of syllables, the sounds, the rhythm. But those have been a way of me talking to me about my day rather than something that I would think would be of particular value to anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Interesting stuff, Marg Heidebrecht. Now, let's get to the cover image of the book. Now, that is one that you have a story in the book about how that came about. So will you tell us that?
Yes. So I'm very lucky, and my life is very rich because I have quite a broad circle of friends. And when in retirement, when I started doing more writing, a good friend of mine, Tina Van Beveren, she retired a year before I did, and she had always tried to find time in her life for painting. She raised 4 children, including a set of twins. She taught kindergarten, was very involved with her church and school life. So there were not a lot of hours in her day to paint. But in retirement, she started clearing time to paint. And she, in fact, has found a great mentor teacher in Sylvia Simpson, who is another Mohawk connection.
Yeah.
And so Tina started being very intentional about painting. So I had this image. I thought when Pam first died and I was so bereft, part of me thought, how can I be so heartbroken when I still have other friends who are sitting with me in this? Some were friends of hers as well. Tina, in fact, had met Pam, but they were not close friends. But friends were sitting with me in this loss, and I sort of thought, how can it be that I am so heartbroken over one when I still have many? And so the idea of an image of a bouquet of flowers came to me, and I started thinking, what if we think about our friends as this bouquet? And in a bouquet, the flowers are different colors, different shapes. Some last a day or two, some last 3 weeks. Some the petals fall, some the stems droop. So I was talking to Tina one day and I said, I have this idea for a project. Why don't I buy 2 bouquets of flowers, identical bouquets. You take one to your house, I'll take one to my house. You can photograph them and paint them as you feel inspired or inclined, and I will journal about them. So we did that. And the chapter, I think it's called Among, and I'm just flipping. Anyway, it's the longest chapter in the book. And in fact, it's the chapter that I was able to get significant help from Kate Cayley at the Hamilton Public Library to help me